I think our guest had that planned, because that blended so well with the music that came before it. So I think it's part of some sort of plan, but I really can't explain it. What I can explain is that this is this thing that, as you know, is called Just Another Menace Sunday. It's been on for 5 years. Why they let it go on, we won't go into. Your friend Dennis the Menace here. And we're here live, as I think you know. Well, those of you who've listened before, those of you who haven't don't know anything. Well, I mean, I'm not trying to insult you or anything. We normally pre-record this so I can hang with my daughter, Kate, who actually is over there in Studio B with our special guest today. And usually, the tagline is our number one, interviews with rock and rollers of note, and our number two, what we like to call all new melodic rock and roll. And today, we have a different kind of rock and roller in the studio, in that he is definitely associated with the music industry, but I think he would say his primary career is as an author. At least that's what I would think. We're going to find out in mere seconds. And we're just going to launch right into it. I think I want to introduce him. You know, you do research for these sort of interviews, and I want to read the way that Mahalo.com introduces American author Daniel Handler, also known as Lemony Snicket. It says that you are an activist and accordion player who writes under the pseudonym of Lemony Snicket. Now, the accordion player, we're going to learn more about. Now, the activist part. Can you tell me a little bit about the activist in you?
I have no idea what that means.
That's
Mahalo.com.
You know how it. You are a man who does a lot of research to get to the things that you portray, you know, in writing and other things that you do. And so I did mine, and I always try to dig for the things that aren't the obvious, because nobody needs another typical interview where you answer the same six questions. So you're only going to answer three of the same questions today. maybe two of the
same. And then
same.
Another one's going to be, how am I an activist?
Yes, so I think we need to start with one that I didn't see in the pages and pages of Google that I went through. Of you know, how you are an activist and accordion player.
I can't imagine who on earth would find me an activist.
I don't know.
It's true. I participate in some leftist causes, which is not much of an act of courage here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I hold politics identical to, I would guess, 99.9% of your listening audience. And I've been lucky enough to earn some money. And so sometimes I donate that to a noble cause, but I have I would like to apologize to all activists, true activists in our listening audience who say, what, Handler? That guy never does anything. It's true. I don't know who. And what is Mahalo.com?
You know, you're going to have to go back. It's Mahalo.com.
I know how to spell Mahalo, but it never occurred to me to look online.
It's actually,
as to what Mahalo might say about me.
I think Mahalo.com is actually a site for Hawaiian people who are searching for activists and accordion players.
I see. It's you find a niche.
Yeah,
a
niche.
That's the trick to hardcore internet.
Yes,
stardom.
It's a social media thing. So I did mention I was only going to ask you. We're going to play a lot of music, and we're going to kind of do.
Oh, good, because you told me to bring some music.
Yes, we're going to play.
So I brought it in a tote bag.
In a tote bag, exactly. We're going to play lots of music, but you know, we do have an interview section to this thing normally.
Sure.
So I want to just do a couple of things before we do launch into music. And the moment,
okay,
the moment that we think we're getting droll in any way, shape, or form, which could be, well, for me, it's about now,
right,
we could just launch right into the music.
Okay.
However, one of the things, I'd love a little revisionist history, because nobody needs to read.
Revisionist history?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we do that a lot on this show.
Revisionist history of what?
Of you, because
World War II never happened. You heard it here.
Well, I'll give you a couple of things to start with.
You know,
we know, if we read the bio properly, we know that Basic 8, you know, was not an easy sell and landed up in the hands of a children's publisher. And that kind of led certain places. And that this is, again, let's tell me if I'm accurate here.
Okay.
That Unfortunate Events was the result of meeting with an editor in a bar. And this is the stuff that I've got so far. So what I'm more interested in revisionist history, because we're going to get to my favorite thing, which is going to be at the end of this interview, is going to be from your literary agent side of all the things you're doing at this moment, which is one which is one long paragraph. But is it indeed true that you really never set out to write, you know, novels for younger folks?
No, it just never occurred to me. That first novel, The Basic Eight, inspired by my time at Lowell High School here in San Francisco, took forever to sell. And there was a children's editor who said, "We're not going to publish this because it's about a high school girl who has a crush on a boy and he doesn't like her back, and so she bludgeons him to death with a croquet mallet. We're not interested in that. But would you write something for children?" And I said no, because I thought it was a terrible idea. But but despite saying no, I began to have this kind of dream bopping around in my head about terrible things happening to children over and over again. I thought that was kind of interesting. And so I called the editor up and I said, "I have an idea, but it's such a terrible idea that if I presented it to you professionally, it would be really embarrassing. I would have to go to your office and I would have to say, there are these children and nothing good happens to them over and over again. What do you say?" And you would be horrified. And so I said, "I'm not going to go to your office. I'm not going to write anything down. I'm going to be at this bar." Now, sadly vanished from the New York landscape, but the bar was called Orson's and it was very dark. And I said, "So meet me at that bar and then I will tell you the idea and then you'll say it's a bad idea, but then we'll just be at a bar so the whole evening won't be a total loss."
Exactly.
And she said she liked the idea, which embarrassed me because I thought it meant that she was a lightweight and she was going to have to call me in the morning. But little did I know that that editor, Susan Rich, who is still my editor, she grew up in Winnipeg, so she could drink like a fish. And so she wasn't a lightweight. She actually liked the idea. And then as it turned out, other people did, which is very surprising.
Leave it to you not to get a typical New York, you know, editor, though, to get one born in Winnipeg. That's really kind of an odd happening, isn't it?
I would say so. Not a lot of people are born in Winnipeg, though. Most of them are interesting. Marcel Zama, the visual artist, is a Winnipegger. The filmmaker Guy Madden is a Winnipegger. So they don't produce a lot of people who people outside of Winnipeg have heard of, but they tend to be interesting.
And one of the things that comes up again and again is, and Kate's going to ask you a question after a couple of songs, because she's, you know, she's warming up. But one of the
really, she's actually just sitting right here staring at her fingernails.
Yeah,
she doesn't
well,
seem like she's warming up at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Now she's put her fingernails underneath her arms because she's embarrassed that I said on the air that she was playing with her fingernails. Now she's shrugging to an imaginary audience. She's frustrated and embarrassed.
I'm a bad dad. My audience knows I'm a lousy dad, so there's nothing much I can do to correct that in this interview.
I'm not going to do anything.
No, I don't think you should. Well, one of the things, you know, the word irony comes up and again and again and again. And as I told you, we're kind of in the middle of the series. I came to it fairly late.
I don't blame you.
And it's the way it happened.
Yes.
I've came to a lot of things fairly late. I mean, I had my child way too late, but, you know, it is what it is. And
a girl is what it is.
And a girl. It is a girl. Thank you for that. But one of the two things that I've learned when I've done a little bit of my reading is that, you know, as I'm reading it, I just look at Kate and I just start laughing because the irony is over the top. And that's what makes it kind of, you know, has changed children's literature in many ways. But also one of the things that you talked about is how naive you were when you launched into all this and really had no idea it was going to go anywhere.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I thought it would be a complete disaster. I was so embarrassed about it, not for myself because I knew I was having a good time, but I was embarrassed that a publishing house was paying me and that people were pretending that it was a book that people would want to read. I was really concerned about it. I was concerned for Susan Rich of Winnipeg, Manitoba, because I thought she moved to New York. She's trying to be a children's editor. And now she's suffered under the delusion that somebody wants to read about terrible things happening over and over to three helpless orphans. Who would want that?
I don't know.
As it turns out, your daughter, she's raising her hand now.
Yeah, she is. So I want to launch into some music because we're going to kind of get into that. But one of the things, now let's see, this wasn't on Mahalo.com, so let's see if this is accurate. One of the things that you mentioned about children's literature and that I don't know if it was when you were younger or not, was your let's see, I want to use the word carefully. I'm not going to quote you here.
Okay.
But your interesting perception of the Wizard of Oz. And I found this great quote that said, you know, once you get to Emerald City, once everything is resolved and worked out, then you can have your little karaoke party and sing all your songs.
Yes, it's true. The musical parts of The Wizard of Oz always stressed me out when I watched it on TV, because here's a young girl. She's in great danger. There's a witch chasing her. She finally finds a couple of companions who might do something to help. And what happens? They keep pausing to sing.
It kind of kills the narrative, doesn't it?
It really, really stressed me out. I would think, why don't you defeat the witch, find the wizard, settle all of your personal problems, and then you can sit around and sing a few tunes, but don't stop and sing.
I agree.
It really unnerves me.
I agree. It's a bad narrative.
Yeah.
It's just the way
it is. That seems like a bad way also to segue into music.
Yeah, but that's why we're doing it.
Yes.
That's part of the joy of this. Well, when we come back, we're going to play some music, but there's all sorts of interesting things to talk about. I want to talk about...
I'm glad you think so.
Well, there probably isn't, you know, but we'll try our best.
All right.
I want to talk about 826 Valencia.
Sure.
I want to talk about The Composer is Dead.
Absolutely.
And I want to talk about the accordion factory in Marin.
Mm.
Because I'm totally intrigued by
Columbo
that.
Columbo Brothers.
Exactly.
No longer there, sadly.
I know.
But we can talk about it.
We can talk about it. So what are we going to listen to now?
There's this very charming band I like called Quixotic. And this is a song called Anonymous Face.
It's Just Another Men of Sunday. There's a great story behind that artist, and I'm going to let Daniel tell us that story that he was telling me off camera.
Off camera. There's nothing like a camera on a radio show. That was San Francisco's own Nathaniel Stuckey, a composer I knew in high school. Lost complete touch with him. Almost literally ran into him on the street. We decided to collaborate, and the results are The Composer is Dead, a piece for narrator and orchestra, not unlike Peter and the Wolf. That was commissioned by the San Francisco Symphony, has been performed all over this great nation of ours, as well as some growing international acclaim. It was the most performed piece of new music for about 3 years running, which is really like being the world's tallest midget. And shortly after his commission from the San Francisco Symphony, he got a commission from another Bay Area standby, the San Francisco City Dump. He was the first composer in residence, and that was... One of the results of his work, he built a bunch of instruments, which he stores in the basement of my house. And he made a recording of the piece. It is called Junkestra. And I think it's out today. Anyway, he just gave me that CD.
Wow, so this might be the world premiere of that track.
I bet it is the world premiere radio broadcast of that track, wow, for sure. Of course, the piece has been performed by the original instruments on a number of occasions, including at Davies Hall. But I'm excited that it's out as a recording. The recording also has a bonus dance mix, which Mr. Stuckey worked very hard on. He bought a copy of Pro Tools and holed up in his Sunset neighborhood studio, by which I mean his house, and made a dance remix of Junkestra. So that wasn't it. That was the third movement of Junkestra.
Yeah, I see the dance mix 2010 is, you know, it's at least twice as long. I mean, the dance mix is a whole 4 minutes and 28 seconds, which is just devastatingly long.
Absolutely.
For a dance mix.
Well, I bet it feels longer if you're on the proper
wavelength. I gave you one there.
Yeah, I couldn't tell whether, I don't know. It's hard sometimes when there's a small child on the radio and one feels intimidated. But I shouldn't feel intimidated because she's not paying a whit of attention.
No, I know. She's going to ask a question.
I don't blame her for not paying a whit of attention, mind you. I'm not resentful.
She's going to circle over to the microphone in a couple of minutes at the appropriate time and ask a question that...
Circle over sounds kind of shark-like.
It is. You never know.
I don't know.
I love on your... We're going to go to your literary agent's website a couple of times here. Just because there's such golden nuggets there.
I'm glad.
I must confess,
I'm not much of a self-Googler, so...
No, there's some really... No, so you don't even know what's on there.
No.
Well, according to that website, you are an adjunct accordionist. I can't even say it. Adjunct accordionist.
Yes.
For the magnetic field.
That's true.
And one of the great quotes that I saw is that you say it's sort of like calling yourself an astronaut because you have a shiny suit.
Well, it's... There were certain members of the media got a hold of Lemony Snicket and the magnetic fields at the same time. And to Stephen Barrett's frustration, I think, Stephen Barrett, of course, writes all of the songs, produces, records, and mixes all of the magnetic fields album, and plays about 98% of the instruments on every single magnetic fields album, not to mention his side projects, The Sixths, Future Bible Heroes, The Gothic Archies, a couple of solo records. And then finally, when he began to get any kind of attention, it was Lemony Snicket's band, the Magnetic Fields, and it's my band, kind of like the cellist who plays on Eleanor Rigby is in the Beatles. But it is true that every so often, when the Magnetic Fields need an accordionist, Mr. Merritt calls me, and then I get to live a kind of glamorous life of being in an indie pop band that people like. And then when it's time to do the difficult parts of indie pop bandhood, like touring places I don't want to visit, or actually writing and recording music, then I get to go home to my regular life. It's a great gig for me. I don't really know what's in it for anyone else, but it is really fun playing accordion with the magnetic fields.
Well, while we're on music, let's just play a track right now from
okay.
that 69 Love. Now, how many of those 69 songs are you actually on? Have you done a count?
I don't remember. It's been a while. The 69 Love Songs just turned 10. It's been a decade since 69 Love Songs. And I used to know how many I played in because we used to play the whole album over the course of two evenings. But now it's just part of the kind of backlist of the magnetic fields. And when I play with the magnetic fields now, I kind of bully my way into as many numbers as they can stand me for. But anyway, this is Crazy for You, but not that crazy.
take us to the moon. I took a pen in my own hand and wrote you 100 tunes. Now I'm crazy for you, but not that crazy. I'm crazy for you, but not that crazy. I pretended you were Jesus. You were just dying to save me. I stood beneath your window with my ukulele. I made my yard a playground just in case we had a baby. Now I'm crazy for you, but not that crazy. I'm crazy for you, but not that crazy. I treated you like God. You were my glass menagerie. Did you not find that odd? I dwelt within and went without and broke my virgin flesh. I performed acts of devotion as if you were Ganesh. But now I'm crazy for you, but not that crazy. Crazy for you, but not that crazy.
You know, now it makes sense to me. I'm listening to his lyrics. And it, you know, when I think about it, you and Steven, it does make sense. I can imagine the banter between the two of you in the studio.
In the studio and, yes, in various watering holes and shaggy diners. I'm actually flying up to Seattle on Tuesday to play with him. He composed a score for the silent version of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Wow.
We performed it at the Castro Theater together along with Johnny Blood on tuba. And the Castro's own a fantastic organist, David Haggerty. And the four of us will be up at the Seattle Film Festival playing that.
Wow.
It sounds like I'm promoting it, but actually,
I wonder. You know
what? Anyway, other people who are going to Seattle this week, you should totally go.
Right,
and
exactly.
And hear it at
theater. And I hear that Alaska Airlines, you can offer a special discount on Alaska Airlines for people that are attending. Is that true?
Well, my luck with Alaska Airlines is that I don't end up paying very much, nor do I end up at my destination. It's kind of an agreement with them. So,
do you end up in different cities?
I usually get my money back because I usually have not been flown anywhere. That's my experience with Alaska Airlines. But I hope it goes better.
Good thing they're not one of the underwriters of this radio show.
No, I'm sure they treat everyone very nice. I have really no complaints. How can I complain? I haven't paid. I end up not paying.
Well, no, it's the deal of the century.
And then I end up also not going.
It's the deal of the century.
Yeah.
So tell me about this accordion factory in Marin, because I know Marin's known for a lot of things, but I really wasn't aware that the accordion, you know, because you think about it, was there an accordion in The Grateful Dead? I don't think there was there?
I bet Bruce Hornsby could whip out an accordion.
Yeah, he probably could.
I don't know that much about The Grateful Dead.
I don't either. That's why I was asking, hoping you had some.
But, when I was in college, I wanted to be in a band, and it was during a time in American pop music in which no keyboard instruments were cool. And so I played, I'd taken piano all my life, and so I had a little synthesizer, but no one wanted that. And so I went and bought an accordion when I was home. One break, I had saved up some money working at bookstores, and I looked up accordions in the Yellow Pages, and there was basically one listing where they sold them, and it was the Colombo Brothers Accordion Factory in Marin. And so I drove over to Marin, and I walked in, and there they were making accordions, and I said I would like to buy one, and I bought an accordion, and that was my first accordion, part of a long slide into an addiction. So I don't recommend that people get into it. The Colombo Brothers Accordion Factory now is closed, sadly. It's almost as if just making accordions isn't a sustainable business anymore.
Do they only make them in France now? Is that the...
China. China is a big place for accordions.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you hear so many...
I have a bright, shiny, red Chinese accordion right now. That's kind of my main accordion because it's the closest thing to indestructible that an accordion can get.
You do,
which
hear
is not a, very close.
You do hear a lot of accordion in Asian music.
You do.
Yeah, I've found that it's one of their key instruments.
Yes, and it's in key as well.
It's not going anywhere.
One of the nice things about accordion is that you have to make everyone tune to you. You can't tune it.
So
when I sit in with any band and they say, your accordion's sharp, I say, well, then we're all sharp, guys. Everybody tune up.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Now, I want to launch into the Lemony Snicket stuff because we kind of haven't gone there. But I do want you to talk about, while we're on the music tip, because then we're going to just find some awkward moment and I'll hit the music, you know, after that awkward moment.
Right.
But I'm about to play something by the Lounge Lizards, and I noticed that this is a 1986 release.
Yes.
So they've been around for a long, long time.
They are, and I'm currently doing a project over at Berkeley Repertory Theater with Eric Senko, the former bass player of the Lounge Lizards. He also leads a band called Skeleton Key, but you don't have to worry, because even though he's a post-punk bass player, he has a more steady gig, which is that he makes marionettes. He's one half of the puppetry troupe Phantom Limb, and I'm working with them on a new puppet show theatrical adaptation of The Composer Is Dead. So
wow.
I thought, being as I brought the music of Nathaniel Stuckey, I should also bring some music by Eric Senko. So this is The Lounge Lizards. Are we playing it now? Am I about to announce it or no?
No, you know what? I just wanted
to.
I wanted to.
Well,
kind
we
of,
are going to play
I
The Lounge
I wanted to
Lizards
billboard that while we were on the
from
music
from 1986.
Tip. We will
because I loved it in high school, and I love it now.
So I think that our junior producer, just launching into Lemony Snicket, and what's I'm going to tell just a one-minute story, which Kate knows pretty well. I actually was visiting somebody who you will have come to you at a, I think you're doing a book signing in L.A. Is it next weekend?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you'll have a gentleman, and he'll hear this on the air and then yell at me, but a friend of mine who I went to college with, and we're talking many, many, many years ago, who's a film director in L.A., has actually just, he and his daughter just wrote their first children's book, but by trade, he's a film director and has had some great indie films, and actually we've done a couple of Mill Valley Film Festival trailers together, and when I was talking about what to read to Kate, he was the one who said, have you read the Lemony Snicket books?
And so it's his fault what you've done to your daughter.
Yes, so it is. So it is entirely.
The fact that she's become kind of depressed and distressed and upset, you're trying to blame on some indie film director who you won't even name.
Richard Schenkman.
Other than saying his name, Richard Schenkman.
Schenkman. Yes.
You're refusing to name him. Other than saying his name into a microphone.
He's a member of the tribe.
On to you.
Why not? He will absolutely positively land up coming up to you at the book signing with all sorts of stuff, which you can ignore the fact that you ever had this interview and we ever chatted about
it. I have a feeling he's going to blame you for something that's happened to one of his children. That's what I feel. It's just that we're all pawns in your game.
You know what? You are.
I'm on to you, menace.
You know what? That's a good thing. It's a good thing. I have no problem with that. I have no issue, and you can.
I'm glad you have no issue with strange men being on to you.
You know what? That's why I live in a neighborhood that's far enough away that it hopefully, does keep the strange men away. But in any case, Kate, you had a question about the, and this was, I don't know which question she's going to ask. So
me neither.
Yeah. What
that's was the thing about life.
It is the
if
thing.
If you're not psychic, you're surprised all the time.
So thousands of people are waiting, Kate, to hear. None of them are listening to this radio show. They're just waiting. But what exactly did you want to ask Daniel or Lemony Snicket? What was your question?
My question was,
yes.
So I know how you're writing, you wrote books about the Baudelaires, and I heard that you're writing about this new series of books or something. Are you writing about the Quagmire triplets at all?
About the Quagmire triplets?
Yeah, because I know they come up sometime in one of the books.
I see. So you have an interest that there are three triplets who have suffered through arson and theft and attempted murder, and that's, you're curious, you hope there's more information about that? You'd like to read more about terrible things that would happen to triplets that you don't even know?
Not exactly.
This is the kind of thing, this is why I don't support the film career of Richard Schenkman, because he has destroyed young people in this way.
I think what she's really asking, because you see, and I can help Kate out here, because from your literary agent's site, I was gonna end with this. But this is the segue here.
Oh, I see. Okay, this is a segue.
His current projects include
Yes.
A fourth novel for adults.
It's true.
Right. A children's picture book titled 13 Words in collaboration with, now is it Mara?
It's Myra. Myra Kalman.
Myra Kalman to be published September 2010.
It's true.
A new novel about pirates.
Yes. Well, that's the adult novel, so it's been described twice now.
Yes, it has.
It's true.
This is how they did it. And the script for the long-awaited second Snicket movie.
So they claim,
which we're not going to go there at this moment. He is also at work on a top-secret new Snicket series.
Right. And your daughter, who seems otherwise bright, seems confused about the phrase top secret and is trying to pressure me into revealing information about whether or not a series of books tackles three helpless triplets with whom she has become obsessed, all thanks to indie film director Richard Schenkman.
But look at her. All she's trying to find out
is... She's hitting herself in the head right now.
She's
striking herself over and over in an attempt to knock herself unconscious and be spared the pain of any further entrapment with literature. And I, for one, can't blame her.
I think.
And now the Lands Lizards.
You know what I think?
With their hit song Big Heart, recorded live in Tokyo in 1986.
You know what I think she's doing before he hits the button with the music? I think what she's really trying to find out whether Dad is going to have to buy another 13 novel box set.
Oh dear!
You know, on this mere pittance of a salary.
I was going to say with KUSF money. Good luck to you.
With not a lot, you know, with a creative salary.
That's
And then have to
all the promotional Fat Boy Slim albums in the world that I'm clutching now are not going to help you there.
Exactly, and then have to hand it over to the other man behind the microphone in royalties that I know are billions of dollars.
I quite agree. It's shocking. Capitalism. When will it shatter? Probably not today. Here are the Lands Lizards.
nobody know you're here. This house of ill repute.
Ooh, honey, I'm scared of you.
Trying to deal with all your fears. I guess this is what you get for being cute.
Cute, cute.
Soaked in banana cologne. No wonder you're all alone. It's written all over your face. You're just so hard in a funky place.
Everybody loves a winner. I spent 8 hours in my makeup chair, waxed my chest and shaved off all my hair. Well, the fire's bright and the frame's tight. Try to get right. Well, we've still got light. But when the house goes up in flames, no one emerges triumphantly from it. When the scum begins to circle the drain, everybody loves a winner.
You know, I think, and I could be wrong, I think I had a bootleg here in the studio. Did I have a bootleg here in the studio?
Well, that that Prince song, Rock Hard in a Funky Place, is from the Black Album, which
right.
I guess was finally given some kind of official release.
Was it? But not
but
in that form.
That copy that you were tucking in there is my long, long bootlegged CD that I bought, I don't know, under mysterious circumstances.
So you're willing to atone to the FCC charges should we get in trouble for playing that track off of that CD?
Well, I'll happily apologize to Prince in person.
Okay.
Though I do think in the long
run,
he's on the
phone
amount
right
of
here.
Money I've spent on Prince should justify the playing of Rock Hard in a Funky Place. I actually think you can now get Rock Hard in a Funky Place up front and legally. But if you're not playing Prince, you're not playing music. That's how I feel about the radio.
You know what? And that's exactly why you're here.
That's sweet of you to say.
That is the only reason. So the other thing...
And then I also want to say that we play the Mountain Goats.
Oh, yes, the Mountain Goats.
Because I love me some Mountain Goats. Has
yes.
John Darnielle been on the show?
You know what? He has, actually.
I'm glad.
Actually
he's a nice
has.
Guy.
Actually has.
I try to bully my way into playing accordion on Mountain Goats albums, and it's never worked.
Uh-oh.
I always say, oh, really? You're coming into town? Well, I'm, you know, but it never happens.
Well, you
but,
know, we can make a phone call.
I do have great admiration for the Mountain Goats. And
wait,
that was
wait.
Michael
you know
Myers' Resplendent, the best song ever written about the shooting of a Halloween movie, I think.
He's on the phone.
Really?
Yes.
I doubt that very much.
Yeah,
from
I
what
do.
I know of John Darnielle... I don't think he's on the phone.
No, he's probably no. Actually,
no.
He'd be sending some sort of telegram or something.
It's true. We
he
exchanged
would.
Poetry via email. He and I interviewed him a long time ago for The Believer, which is published by McSweeney's,
what
which is across
segue.
The street from 826 Valencia. You're
what
welcome. That was my gift to you.
Oh, that was beautiful. The tears. Can you feel the the whole studio's just gotten very humid.
Well, that was such a transition. My head is spinning.
You know, and I was just reading your review of Other Flowers by James Schuyler, as a matter of fact.
Were you?
I was.
I'm glad someone was reading that.
And I'm going to go out and buy all of his poetry, which is good because it won't take me that long to read.
No.
But it's pretty quirky.
It's very good poetry. But I quite recommend James Schuyler to all of our listeners.
We actually have done a lot with 826 Valencia on this radio show in terms of the cause, because it is a pretty interesting thing. And what gets misspoken about it, I think, is that it's this weird clique of very upscale authors and blah, blah, blah.
826 Valencia is?
Well, the whole thing behind it.
Well, I think people tend to mix up 826 Valencia and McSweeney's. McSweeney's
right.
is a literary magazine and a publishing house. Started by Mr. Dave Eggers and now run, largely, let's just say by Eli Horowitz, by a number of charming individuals. And they put together a fantastic magazine, the latest issue of McSweeney's. I'm happy to say I'm in for the first time. I have a piece of short fiction in that McSweeney's, and it also comes with a book of up-to-the-minute Iraq war reporting from Mr. Nick McDonnell. And I brook no disagreement on the integrity and charm of the people at McSweeney's. Meanwhile, also, located just across the street at, you'll never guess where, 826 Valencia, is 826 Valencia a tutoring center for young people, which offers free help with homework and classes in all kinds of writing. And in the front, it's also a pirate store. When you need pirate equipment, when you need eye patches,
when you need
a peg leg, when you need a skull and crossbones, where do you go? You're going to go to Walmart's? Don't be ridiculous. You're going to go to 826 Valencia, the only independently owned pirate store in San Francisco.
That really, you know, that was better than a Kmart commercial.
Thank you.
That was just special.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say.
I have no segue.
Even if you don't mean it.
I don't mean it. I have no segue here whatsoever.
Okay.
But one of the things is Kate and I were reading, this is so completely off, but I didn't want to leave this alone because I had to do some research this morning.
All right.
As Kate and I were reading number 8 right now.
Oh, dear.
Music hath powers to soothe the savage breast.
Yes.
And then I said to Kate, wait a minute, is it breast or beast?
Everyone thinks it's beast.
And then
but
I
it isn't,
went,
it's breast.
And do you know the whole history? Do you know where the beast
do the,
came?
Do I know the history of beasts and breasts?
No.
Most certainly, but I'm not going to discuss it in front of your daughter.
No, do you know the history?
Not with a K-I-D in the room.
Do you know where the expression came from?
Do I know where the expression
I might
came from?
Know the savage beast. I might actually teach you something. This is possible.
I'm happy to learn.
Hurdy,
I may be being reminded, but I'm spacing out now.
Hurdy Gurdy Hair, Bugs Bunny, Warner Brothers cartoon, 1950. Last minute, he says, soothe the savage beast.
So that's how it transformed into beast.
That's how it transformed into
gotcha.
Beast.
Oh, gotcha. You're blaming Bugs Bunny now.
I am blaming Bugs
this is
Bunny.
What it's come to.
And the last line, by the way, because the whole thing is, you know, they're talking about music and the savage beast.
Yeah.
The last line is, I hope Petrillo doesn't hear about this. So I looked up Petrillo. Petrillo was the head of the American Federation of Musicians from 1892 to 1984.
Wow. That's a long time.
But you talk about in jokes.
Yeah.
End of a Warner Brothers cartoon, they refer to the head of the AFM.
Well, maybe somebody owed him money.
I think they did.
That's the only theory I have.
And now the no segue.
My also theory is that I think you're spending too much time on Google. That's just what I'm getting here.
You know what?
Is that you went from music hath charms to soothe the savage breast to suddenly looking up the people who are running musical organizations in which most people, frankly, I think, have no interest.
And this is why, by the way, people should read books.
Rather than staring at a screen
that's my
and Googling
point.
Things at random, I'm in favor of that as well.
I think that's a good
that
thing.
Seems like kind of mild praise for reading. It's
it
better
is.
Than Googling things at random.
It's the best I can do under these circumstances.
Is this why you no longer run an ad agency?
This is why. Yes.
Coca-Cola, it's better than a shot in the head.
You know.
Does sound good.
Did you know that was my line? Did you know I wrote that one? I killed the brand. Pepsi took over.
That's right.
And, you know, Dr. Pepper.
Let's say you're a hostage.
Yeah, exactly.
They're either going to shoot you in the head or they're going to serve you an icy cold Coke. What's your choice?
Okay.
Yes.
The
choice is clear. Coca-Cola.
Which is a great segue to the literary death match.
Oh, that's true.
June 11th, because we are technically over the hour, and as much as
I see. All right. Well, come see us on Friday night. I'm going to be judging the literary death match, which Opium Magazine has been putting on for a number of years now. Writers come, and they read, and judges are ridiculous, and absurd prizes are awarded. And I'll be judging intangibles, my favorite aspect of literature. So come on down to the Yerba Buena Arts Center and see us. Would be I think it's something like the 25th literary death match. It's amazing.
Now NPR usually says that there's a transcript of this recording available.
Is there?
Yes, I think this radio show requires a schematic. So we will be publishing a schematic of the of how this radio show went. It will be available at my website.
Wow, will it be a kind of emotional schematic?
Yes, an emotional schematic.
Wow.
One of your favorite bands.
I'm picturing, you're saying schematic, but I'm picturing a flowchart. This is what's wrong.
And again, people who spend too much time on PowerPoint.
That's true. And I guess we're heading out. Should I intro the next song?
Yes, you should say.
As you can see, I used to work vaguely in radio.
You should.
So I have these strange radio professional urges.
You should bid adieu.
I brought a lot of music, and one of the things that I brought, and I'm sorry, Grace Jones and Matt Most, that we didn't have time to play your music.
Oh, there'll be a return.
We do have time for one of the greatest songs in the history of the universe, Mr. Henry Mancini's It Had Better Be Tonight.
Stasera, baby, go, go, go. Or as we name it, say, fa subito. If you're ever gonna kiss me, it had better be tonight. While the mandolins are playing and
had better be tonight.
Or somebody else may tell me and whisper the words just right. Bello esta cera, baby, go, go, go. Or as we natives say, va subito.
For this poor Americano, who knows little of your speech, be a nice Italiano and start to teach.
Show me how in old Milano lovers hold each other tight. But I warn you, sweet paisano, it had better be tonight. Meglio stasera, baby, go, go, go. Or as we natives say, va subito.
The Roxy Cinema was founded in 1909 and is the oldest continually operating theater in San Francisco. Acquired it by the New College of California in 2006 and renamed the Roxy New College Film Center, it remains San Francisco's most provocative art house cinema, as well as a dynamic learning venue for New College media students. Through exhibition of diverse films, film festivals, special events, and the distinction of showing more documentaries every year than any other theater in the country, the Roxy is the premier community resource and venue for San Francisco's diverse Bay Area film community, and seeks to be a model for the future of independent film exhibition in the United States. For more information and find out how you can help, visit roxy.com.
Support for KUSF is provided by Studio Trilogy.
These are some of the